Jim Taylor on WRMJ and WRMJ.com, approaching Election Day here across the nation, locally in Mercer County, and a contested race in Mercer County is for state's attorney. We get a chance to visit with incumbent state's attorney, Megan Lee, who's been, we're talking a little bit off the air, in the county 14 and a half years. Did you say 6 years as state's attorney? So I guess just tell us your 14 and a half year experience in Mercer County. What do you think so far?
Well, I started here under Greg McHugh, and I'll be honest, I came in pretty green. I had only about 2 years experience. I was working civil cases out of Peoria, did a couple jury trials in DeKalb. I was looking for something a little bit different, closer to home. So when I found out there was an opening, I met with Mr. McHugh. I had published an article on domestic violence and was instrumental in the Zeke Georgie Legal Clinic up in Rockford. And Mr. McHugh really thought that that would help in Mercer County, given the fact that we have a rather high rate of domestic battery. He took a chance, and it ended up working out great. I started doing cases, starting out with, you know, traffic, misdemeanor. Eventually, within a year or two, I was doing trials on any felony you could throw at me. Right now, I would say that experience, that 8 or so years under him, learning the ropes, figuring out what is needed in this community, as well as how to work well with officers, you can't do that overnight. That takes time. And growing up, and I would say growing up as a lawyer, through this office, I've had an opportunity to make some amazing relationships throughout all the communities, Rock Island, Whiteside, Henry, of course, all the officers in Mercer, including the federal system. I have great contacts when we have cases that go from state to federal. I work with John Mahochko. I work with Quad City Meg, the state police, IDNR. These are all things that I've learned through the course of my career.
And I guess we need to back up. Pandemic has been in effect since March of last year, or I should say March of this year. So can you enumerate a little bit? How has that impacted your job as lead prosecutor in Mercer County? How has that impacted, you know, kind of business Mercer County Circuit Court and dealing with that on a daily basis?
It's been very difficult. To be honest, I think the community doesn't have an understanding of exactly what these COVID guidelines mean for the courtroom. Recently, Illinois changed their bail bond. They did a bail bond reform where they categorized things as a Category A or a B offense. So if your crime is a Category B offense, you can't be held in jail. You have to be released, unless there are extenuating circumstances. Now, if the judge comes in and he sees, hey, you've got a Category B offense, you're going to be released. And defendants in the community, or victims in the community, don't understand that. It's not my choice. And it's not like I want to lock up people forever either. But Category A offenses are given a higher bond. But with COVID, because of the fact that there's such potential for horrible exposure at a jail setting, we have been asked by the Circuit Court of Rock Island, as well as the Sheriff's Department, to work with them to avoid outbreaks. So essentially, since March, we've pretty much been unable to keep people in custody unless that crime is something extremely violent and or extensive.
So you're talking about, you know, class X felony, those type of things where you can continue to be held.
Correct. Or things like residential burglary where you have mandatory prison, or if we're talking pounds of drugs or things of that nature.
All right. So, you know, when you talk about this job, and you've been in the state's attorney's office 14 and a half years, six as state's attorney, and we're in a small rural county where kind of everybody knows everybody. So when we get involved in, you know, criminal cases, for example, you know, from the perspective, the balance, I guess, from you in terms of, I hear, this is me on the street when I cover these cases, and if it's the victim's family, maybe they'll say the sentence not harsh enough, or it's too lenient. But then you look at the defendant, and the defendant's family will say, this sentence is too harsh. So, to me, it's a position where almost you can't make anyone happy, so to speak. How do you deal with that balance and satisfy those two contrasts, I guess?
That's a very, very difficult question to answer because every case is different. Most of the time, you are going to find that victims feel that the punishment isn't harsh enough, and defendants' family and defendants themselves think that we're being too harsh. I try to walk the line where I keep in contact with my victims. I have a wonderful victim advocate who keeps everybody in line, keeps them appraised of the cases. And before I settle a case, generally speaking, if there's a victim, they've already agreed to the terms. They may not always like it, but they also don't understand that I can't throw you in prison if you've committed a misdemeanor. Although your things may have been stolen, it doesn't mean that I can send someone to prison. All I can do is, at a sentencing hearing, ask the judge to please sentence a defendant to a certain amount. The judge can say yes or no. He can go lower and he can go higher. Most cases, though, I would say our victims are generally pleased with how we've come to the resolution because I keep in contact with them. I try not to settle cases without having spoken with a victim first. As far as a defendant goes, I don't know that you're ever going to please one. I mean, unless they get a not guilty or an acquittal.
Yeah. And I guess the other thing is when you look at the amount of cases that your office handles per annum, when I talk about traffic and felony cases, do you know off the top of your head?
Roughly, we have around 100 felony cases a year. Traffic cases were probably 500 to 600, and misdemeanor anywhere between 100 to 200.
So you're close to 2,000 cases.
Correct.
And there's you and an assistant state
attorney. That's correct.
So can you talk about balancing that to within a budget? And then, you know, a lot of people will say, well, why don't we have jury trials, or she's not having enough jury trials, or we need to do this, or why do we have to negotiate everything, and a typical, you know, plea agreement in
right.
terms of those type of criticisms that maybe I hear covering the court
sure.
system, or maybe even you hear.
Yeah.
How do you respond to that?
Well, I will tell you that any time a defendant wants a jury trial, they're welcome to it. I am not afraid of them, and the fact is that most of the time a defendant changes their mind at the last minute and decides they don't want to take the risk of having 12 individuals listen to whatever it is they've allegedly done and then come back with either a guilty verdict or a not guilty verdict. What they can do is come to us as a state and say, listen, I'm willing to say I did this. What would you give me in exchange for not making you get all your victims here, re-traumatize, or waste the community's time because we all know I did it? If they want to negotiate with me, I'm always open. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen, but I don't have the right to say no to jury trial. That's all on a defendant. And I know the community probably thinks the state has some say in that, but we don't. It's purely a defense decision.
And that's where we're at, backing up to COVID. So if you cannot reach a negotiated agreement in a case, and that means if there's not a negotiated disposition, the state can't come to an agreement with defense, that means that defendant is being held over with the right to have a jury trial. And right now you can't have jury trials
correct.
Because of COVID. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct.
So that's why a lot of these big cases that are Class X felony cases, they've been continued.
Absolutely.
Because an agreement hasn't been reached, and they have a right to a jury trial, and a jury trial can't be held. Long story short, am I assessing that right?
You are. And also, I would say that it's a tactic. It's a tactic by defense, not defense, I would say a defendant, knowing that we can't have a jury trial. They can't be held in jail right now due to COVID if they're out. That gives them months and months and months of freedom as long as they hold on to that right, which they're completely entitled to. But they know we can't do jury trials right now. They know that we don't have the ability to. We are trying. We are working on a way of getting our courtroom set up right now so that we can start doing jury trials. However, we have a backlog of about 7 or 8 jury trials. And if you are out of custody, you go to the end. So if I'm out of custody and I'm on a Class 1 residential burglary bond, I know I'm not going to have a jury trial until probably August of next year. Because I have 6 or 7 ahead of me and a few of those are in custody, and they go first. So it is also a delay tactic, knowing that they get to keep their freedom.
All right. I guess a good, perfect question to you would be, what is the thing that you perceive as maybe the biggest piece of misinformation involving light court or being a state's attorney? For example, for me, you know, doing this for 30 years, learning being a young reporter and learning the process of, well, when you're initially charged and then going through a preliminary hearing, you have the right to waive that, but then there has to be probable cause, and then learning, now this is just me speaking, learning the difference between probable cause at a preliminary hearing is much different than guilty beyond a reasonable doubt at a jury trial. So that's like my me going through the process as not knowing anything about court when I first started reporting on it to now. So from your perspective, when you have conversations maybe with somebody at a coffee shop that sees you and says, well, what are you doing this for? You know, and then you have to say, well, no, it's not this way. And maybe it's just something as it relates to a specific case, because we get a lot of that conversation right now. So I guess, for long story short again, what do you think is the big misinformation out there?
Well, I think the biggest misinformation or the biggest thing I get questions about are, why did you charge it the way you did and why didn't you charge it this way? Because I've heard in the past that maybe I've had someone get beaten, or a victim has shown up and gotten beaten up. And yes, the family wants an aggravated battery, but it doesn't meet the threshold. So we have to charge what we have evidence to prove. Now, people think that just because someone stole something and you see them with it, that that's a burglary. Well, no, they're in possession of something that's stolen. You can't jump to the conclusions that the general community does. I wish I could. It would make life a lot easier. But the fact is, I can only handle and prosecute what I can prove. And with the help of law enforcement, we are very lucky to have a great law enforcement group here, both county and city, and all the local communities. But their work makes my job a lot easier. And the misconception by the county or county community is that I either undercharge or I overcharge. And the fact is, when I was young, I admit, I probably was very aggressive and probably overcharged. I was a little too aggressive. Over the years, I've learned, obviously, good people make bad decisions and bad people do bad things as well. But it doesn't necessarily mean I have to charge to the hilt. I mean, if there are appropriate charges that handle what's necessary to bring everybody back to whole, that's the way we're going to handle it. I can always upgrade later.
Yeah, and I know from the social media culture that we live in today, criminal court cases are always, that always gets the most feedback. I mean, it's just the way you call it the social court, I guess, of public opinion, and then court of law. You kind of spoke to that a little bit. Can you distinguish between court of public opinion and court of law? And are you swayed by, I guess the question is, do you get swayed by court of public opinion, or is that a fair question?
That's a fair question. I can tell you that I often get vilified in social media. Whether or not there's any basis to it or not, or whether there's any factual basis to it, oftentimes it's angry people not liking a result, or it's a family member of someone being vindictive. Does it sway my decisions? Absolutely not. It doesn't change the fact that I cannot prove something in court. Either I can prove it or I can't. It's pretty black and white.
All right. So we wrap up here. Anything that I didn't bring up that you need to bring up, or what would you like to say to the voting public out there, that as we talked, you can still vote early until November the 2nd, or they can vote on Election Day from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. next Tuesday?
Well, I think I would really like to just tell this community several things. One, I absolutely back law enforcement 100%. I could not do my job without them. This community needs them, and I back them. Second, if you have questions or concerns about something that I'm doing, my door is always open. And I also want to say that with the tenor of the nation as it is now and the contentious elections that are going on, I do not believe that politics should play a role in the state's attorney's office, period. It should not matter which side of the line you stand on.
All right. Megan Lee has been in Mercer County for 14 and a half years, 6 years serving a state's attorney seeking re-election. Thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Jim.
And I'm Jim Taylor on WRMJ.